On Robinhood Radio, it's time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.com and has reported since 2012 for the PBS network, mainly on ethical issues. He is also the author of a memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning December 6th, 2024. 'Tis the season, the media keep telling us, and sure enough, they are already, as always around this time of year, reaching saturation point with Christmassy material, pretty much regardless of any particular religious bent or affiliation. For America's true religion, certainly in the mass media, is to venerate the great god of commerce more than anything else. But perhaps a bit weightier is the ritual every 4 years at this same point in the calendar, when the media get just as saturated with transition stories, that supposedly peaceful handover from one governing administration to another. And even more strikingly than in 2016, with a winning candidate then who himself had not even really believed he would win, and no practical preparations for entering government had remotely been worked out. The turbulence now, the almost crazy turbulence of this 2024 transition, is simply all-encompassing. This time around, there is, though, one clear theme in amongst a lot of inconsistency, inexperience, incompatibility, contentiousness, or we could just use The Atlantic magazine's word for it all, sheer perversity. But here's a somewhat consistent theme. A lot of intended cabinet members and other key nominees for the new administration are drawn from television, and especially Fox News. We could call it cross-pollination between two different fields, or the cliché that commentators have been reaching for this week, the revolving door between the two realms, or perhaps better still, the Fox News rebound, which a few headline writers have favoured. I should say I have nothing against television as an operating base in general. In fact, I am pretty much at my core a TV guy myself. Just about everyone in communications nowadays has to be a multimedia practitioner, and I'm no exception. And throughout my career, the particular medium I've cropped up in has varied widely from what we used to call affectionately steam radio, to paper, be it in magazine form or actual ink-stained newspaper, to digital material posted or streaming online. But the most persistent medium for me has been television, ever since I first nervously stepped onto the screen at the tender age of 19. That was back in my original home country of Britain, and later, for a while in that nation during the 1970s and 80s, there was something of a trend for prominent politicians changing careers and becoming TV hosts. Indeed, one rather peculiar part of my professional life saw me as the co-host of a national Sunday morning political show on TV, having to make way for one such politician, who'd just been hired as the show's new solo host. Part of my own exit process involved me training the incomer in some of the more workaday skills of our job, like reading the teleprompter convincingly to a camera, which is, I had to impress upon that apprentice, very different from declaiming to crowds from a podium. So there's considerable piquancy for me now in observing the Trump transition process working in the opposite direction from my British experience, since it looks like a wholesale transfer of personnel from TV, especially Fox News, of course, into government. It's hard to pick out the most egregious example to start with. They're almost all pretty egregious. But let's home in first on Pete Hegseth, who joined Fox as a contributor in 2014 and more recently has been co-host of the Fox and Friends weekend edition. Now, this may be old news by the time you hear this, but it's still valuable to trace how the story developed. We can start with that show, Fox and Friends, being once upon a time Trump's favorite viewing. And chatter on the show was well documented for having a formative influence on the first Trump administration's policy-making, if that's what it was. So Secretary of Defense in the new Trump administration was the post intended for Hegseth. He has had little executive experience, though he did serve in the Army National Guard and did run two right-wing veterans associations until he had to leave them. The thing is, once Matt Gaetz's nomination for Attorney General was withdrawn, on grounds of his being reputationally compromised by alleged sexual and substances-related misconduct, he was replaced, in a sense, by Hegseth. It became Hegseth's turn to be accused of sexual assault and drunkenness, some of it while presiding over veterans' advocacy. He was revealed to have paid off a woman who accused him of assault, while he denied any wrongdoing. But his record generally with women was decried by, of all sources, Mrs. Hegseth, his own mother, according to a New York Times investigation. She was quoted as saying in an email she sent her son 6 years ago, "I have no respect for any man that belittles, lies, cheats, sleeps around and uses women for his own power and ego. You are that man, and have been for years, and as your mother, it pains me and embarrasses me to say that, but it is the sad, sad truth." However, some maternal feelings of a different kind emerged while the Times was pursuing its inquiries, and Penelope Hegseth disowned her email, saying she had written it when she was, quote, "in anger, with emotion," unquote. She even went on Fox News, where else, to say how much she'd changed her mind about her son and wanted to plead on his behalf. A confirmation hearing for Hegseth in a narrowly divided United States Senate promised then, of course, to be quite something for congressional reporters to chronicle. Richard Blumenthal, Democratic senator from Connecticut and a member of the Armed Services Committee, was asked about the matter by The New Yorker magazine, which had also been digging into Hegseth's troubling behavior patterns. He compared the Hegseth nomination to a long-ago failed effort by the elder President Bush to appoint as Defense Secretary John Tower, himself a senator, but one bedeviled by drink and sex allegations. John Tower went down for these same kinds of issues, Blumenthal said. I don't think it's a partisan issue. He went on to say about Hegseth that literally life and death issues are in the hands of a Secretary of Defense, and entrusting these kinds of issues to someone who might be incapacitated for any reason is a risk we cannot take. Another dimension of Hegseth's attitudes toward women is perhaps more pertinent to his being appointed to run the Pentagon. In the increasingly revealing field of podcast appearances, Hegseth found himself saying out loud that the military, quote, "should not have women in combat roles, and that men in those positions are more capable." We should remember here that currently women make up nearly a fifth of our armed forces, but Hegseth dismissed all this ascending importance for women by saying, "It hasn't made us more effective, hasn't made us more lethal, has made fighting more complicated." As I say, some very pointed confirmation proceedings would be lying in wait for Hegseth. Matt Gaetz's replacement as Attorney General nominee, Pam Bondi, the former State Attorney General in Florida, has been doing something sensible, going to Capitol Hill and paying the necessary duty calls upon senators in hope of getting a sympathetic hearing. There's little sign yet of that being done by another, let's say, provocative nomination, Kash Patel, Trump's fervent, nay, fanatically loyal pick to head the FBI. To make way for him, of course, Trump will have to fire his own previous choice in 2017, Christopher Wray, who technically still has 3 years to serve in the job. Here's just one element in Cash's record that stands in severe contrast to the kind of objectivity we might expect in a judicial or law enforcement appointment. He launched a non-profit, the Cash Foundation, that, in his own words, offers financial help to a range of recipients, including the families of people charged for their participation in the January 6th attack on the Capitol building. Patel has been a convinced believer in the Trumpian idea of the deep state conspiring against Trump from within the ranks of government. And indeed, like many others in his circle, Patel went on a podcast to say just how he wanted to deal with such an alleged threat. The podcast was that other Trump acolyte Steve Bannon's show named The War Room, and Patel said the following: "We will go out and find the conspirators, not just in government, but in the media. We're going to come after you, whether it's criminally or civilly." A nice legalistic adverb there, as might befit a future FBI director. His boss, Trump, by the way, is now on record as threatening 15 times over to revoke broadcasting licenses, singling out ABC, CBS, NBC, and even Fox, which, since he lost power last time, he's been very erratic about. What, I wonder, has he not been erratic about? But Fox is still from where he has drawn many of his choices. Besides those already mentioned, there's Michael Waltz, picked for National Security Advisor, a paid Fox contributor from back in 2017, before he was elected to the U.S. House representing a northeastern stretch of Florida, and then became the most frequent Congress member on the Fox channel, scoring around 570 appearances. And then there's Marty McCary, for Food and Drug Administration Commissioner, a Fox contributor since 2020, when he was vigorously opposed to COVID vaccination mandates. Tom Homan for Trump's so-called border czar, a Fox contributor since 2018, and when previously in office, the originator of Trump's splitting families policy. And Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence, a Fox contributor since 2020, and she also, of course, switched parties from previously being a Democrat. Oh, and we should not forget Mike Huckabee, the nominee for ambassador to Israel, who hosted his own show on Fox for 6 years. In addition, we should not forget that he's also a devout Christian Zionist. And just as a footnote, I should add that Pete Hegseth is a Christian Zionist too. Can't help returning to him, as if his previously listed credentials were not enough. Can't help adding also that he sports tattoos that evoke images and a slogan in Latin from the medieval Crusaders. No, I am not making this up. The Trump coattails are pulling in the oddest bunch of followers. I'll be making a trip to Washington in just a few days, and I promise to keep you posted on all the transition hubbub. That's all from the Media Beat for this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.com.